Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sorry.
We're on the live stream, Brad.
We're just talking about pizza.
That's all right. Of course you are. Everybody who tunes into the live stream will be more than used to this. We've clicked start, and I think Matt has gone off to change his shirt and get himself a drink. So, can anybody do an American accent that could just stand in?
Hey, Spanners, how's it going?
Nope, too fast, not enough pauses. Hey, there it goes. Two rumpets. Okay. So guys, welcome to Missed Apex Podcast Live. Obviously, we're doing a bit of go-karting later. We are putting this out as a podcast, so you'll be part of the show. So do feel free to troll. Do feel free to shout out to an extent. Are any of my real-life trolls from the chat room? Did they come up? If you want to ask a question, we'll do it schoolyard style. So just stick your hand in the air, and Tony will come and shove a mic in your face.
Oh,
I don't know.
Depends which school you went to.
I went to a very, very good school in Essex. Nicola, don't give it. That's my wife in the corner. That's Mrs. Spanners. Say hello.
Are you going to say all those really nice things that you normally say?
Right, okay, guys. Remember the deal we made, okay? If you want me to be allowed out karting again, okay, I say nice things about Mrs. Spanners. So far, Nick, how's this comparing to the recorded version that you sit and watch? No, didn't think so. Right, okay, good. So I think I'm safe. I'm safe. Okay, good. So why don't we get on with the show then? Let's see if this works. I have no idea if this is going to work or not. Okay, ready? Let's go for it. You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Polite round of applause. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. This episode is called Hell Hath No Fury, Like a Manufacturer Scorned. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined live in the flesh by Brooklyn's own Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going great, you know, nothing like 36 straight hours up, immediately into karting, and then a live show.
So that's your driver excuse sorted, that flight.
Yeah, done. Done right there.
Are we going to talk about how I saw you crash in a straight, or are we just going to gloss over that?
I didn't crash in a straight. I beg your pardon. I didn't even spin once.
Not as far as these people know. I could have.
Nice try, though.
Yeah, it's out on the podcast now, so it's real. I'm also joined by autosport journalist Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
It's going great. I mean, I can't believe how many people we've got here to actually just sit and watch us talk for an hour.
It's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure on the karting event later. How did your practice session go?
I didn't have one because I'm poor.
Oh dear. Well, you're not going to do very well. Who else? At the end, we've got our expert racy driver man, Bradley Philpott. How's it going, Brad?
I'm only here for the karting.
You are so competitive. You are the most competitive human being I've ever met.
Yep. I definitely didn't come this week for two practices, having already driven many races at Botmore Park.
So I'm saying to Brad, okay, so, you know, we're going to have a lot of people there. We've got like 50 people, 50 listeners. Make sure you're cordial. It's not all about winning. And all he's hearing is blah, 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 blah. Beep, 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 beep. Win, 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 isn't it? So, yeah. So, don't expect any polite conversation out of Brad. He just wants to win. We are also joined by a live audience. Give yourselves a round of applause. So we're going to get these guys to join in. We have a roving thunder beast. So if you want to ask any questions, get his attention and he'll give a microphone to you. We've also got with us the tech man from Birmingham, Summers F1. Yep, yeah, see. They gave themselves more applause. We've got Quizmaster of Terrible Quizzes, Chris Catman Turner, sat there. Oh, we've got Ryan Ferris. That's what he looks like with the light on. And we're also joined by expert driver, star of LMP1, Alex Brundle, to teach us how to drive. Yay! So, Matt, after podcasting for 4 years, I think, and about 300 shows, you've now met me live. Is it harder because of how distractingly handsome I am in real life?
No, actually, I think the most distracting thing when it, because, you know, we only see each other over a TV screen, through a TV camera, and that distorts the image. But really, the most remarkable thing was that you're just exactly one span as high.
I am exactly one span as high. That's true. also, for you guys, this is the first time you've heard either me or Matt sober. So that's the first. So,
speak for yourself.
Let's see if sober we can actually pronounce the driver name. So, Ricky Icciardo. Pinkham. Natalie Pinkham.
Isn't it Pinkman?
Do you want to give Bottas?
Isn't it Pinkman?
Do you want to give Bottas a try?
Bottas.
Nope. Yeah.
No?
Same.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, let me try again. Boat-ass.
No, Boat-ass.
That's not better.
No. And Leclerc. Okay. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our wives. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. See, I didn't give you enough warning. Let's have a sting. It's going to sound dead pro in a minute. Hold on. 2 seconds.
Thank God for the edit.
No, this is okay.
Good thing this isn't live. Oh.
That's fine. Everyone stare at him while he's doing it. That's fine. That can stay in. Okay, so we're going to be doing our... Okay, and now switch it back to the piano for the next one. Okay, it's going fantastically well. So we're going to be doing our mid-season review. We're going to get Summers up here to talk some tech. We're going to get Alex up here to teach us about some driving styles from the many series he's been in. But firstly, Brad, this is a karting event. We're here at Buckmore Park, and I have to say, they've looked after us fantastically. This is one of the most exciting go-kart tracks I've ever been to. Obviously, I'm not an experienced bloke, but that downhill section, I'm not afraid to say, I'm genuinely frightened in the tight right-hander.
Yeah, it's a really, really good kart track, isn't it? It's one of my absolute top tracks to drive in the country. And they've got very fresh karts here. And the karts are pretty quick. They're 390cc, which is the most powerful four-stroke rental kart you're going to drive. So it's a great track, and you're right, there are some scary, dangerous bits if you get them wrong.
Yeah. Now, I haven't eaten for 2 weeks, and because of fear, like I stood on the scales 2 weeks ago and went, oh my God, the event's coming up soon. So I've dropped about 3 kilograms. How important is weight in karting in general? Is that 3 kilograms going to help me today?
It will give you some tangible benefit. There's probably more help that you could have got by practicing more. But to be fair to you, you've done some, unlike some people on the panel. So, we can actually work out how much that's going to help you. Because our standard figure is every 10 kilos is going to give you 0.3 seconds quicker lap on a 30 second lap. This is more like a 50 second lap.
Yep.
So, and what have you dropped? So say, let's round up your 3 to 5 kilos.
Okay.
So on a standard track, that would have given you, you know, 1.5 tenths. And around here, that's probably 3 tenths. So somewhere 2-ish tenths or something like that, you've probably helped yourself out. And that could be the difference if we had any kind of qualifying today, which we don't.
No.
It could have been several positions on a grid. And today, it might just make the difference of you managing to hang on to the cart in front to be able to make a pass at some point on the lap. So, you know, it might have genuinely helped.
Ah, good.
Who else hasn't been eating enough for the past couple of weeks?
I've probably eaten more. I've probably put on weight, and I am weirdly proud of that.
So you were a lost cause to begin with.
So is he hoping for rain? So we often have people saying if it rains, that's going to help me out, because if you're heavier in the rain, you get more grip. No. So it's good to be.
That's just something we say to the heavy people to make them feel better. So shut up, bang on. No. So the answer.
Daytona, and I just spun constantly. So no.
That
rain
that
thing.
Definitely wasn't weight related. So the weight thing. You hear this spoken about a lot, and really the way to think of it is, being heavier when it's slippery will help you out right up until the point where the wheel stops spinning. And from that point onwards, you want to be light again. And so then it is a disadvantage again. So in the moments where you want more traction, you do want some more weight over the wheels that are spinning. But that's not normally for very long, particularly in rental cars that aren't that powerful. And it's, you're not going to be spinning any wheels today in the dry. So
I think the best way you've ever put it to me is you said to me, you never see anyone adding weight ever.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone get into a wet race and go, oh yeah, let me get up the lead.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
So later on, look around you, look at the skinny people. They're probably, I hate you skinny people. Right. Okay. Tell you what, Why don't we talk about some news? Big dirty news. So, the big dirty news, we were going to do a mid-season review, but then Daniel Ricciardo just decided to lick a stamp and sign it, and he has gone and signed for Renault, just completely out of the blue. Now, Missed Apex Podcast understands that, that the Red Bull guys themselves didn't know about it until the day before yesterday. So Christian Horner literally found out 2 days ago, we found out yesterday, and that has got to be just a sick gut punch, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it wasn't really something we were expecting. There's been all this talk about the new Red Bull deal was going to come before Spa or something. There were all these sort of quotes that we assumed were about a Red Bull deal. And it turns out that they're not.
Yeah, he sort of hinted, didn't he, saying, oh, you know, what Lewis Hamilton did at Mercedes, no one thought Mercedes was going to do well. So he thinks he's going to emulate that.
In a way, the thing about Mercedes was that the work for 2014 was already in motion when Lewis arrived, whereas Renault don't seem to have anything at the moment. I mean, we know we've got the regulation changes for next year with the simpler front wings. Maybe Renault think they've got something up their sleeve, and they've shown that to Daniel, and that makes him think that they're going to be closer to the front next year, or certainly by the end of 2020. I mean, there's no point only getting to the front by the end of 2020, because then we've got massive regulation changes for the year after.
Phil Potter.
Yeah, so I've got a take on this, and that's, I think Ricciardo, for a start, he doesn't see the next couple of years that the Red Bull's going to be a brilliant, you know, the car itself is probably going to be great, but the Honda is almost certainly not going to be the class of the field. And he's got a teammate which is, you know, he's at best going to be kind of 50-50 in terms of finishing results with Verstappen.
It's a lack of faith in Honda, I think, is something that's quite crucial in the sort of next 2 years.
But added to that, I think he sees that in a couple of years, Renault might be in a position. You know, they've always won when they've come into Formula One before. So he doesn't want to be jumping into a Renault at a point where they're already doing really well, because that seat might be taken. There might not be a vacancy there in 2 years when they've demonstrated that they're, you know, one of the best teams. So,
yeah, so and he can take the credit for making them one of the best teams as well. But Matt,
yeah,
can reach out and touch you.
I know.
This is amazing.
It's creepy. Stop.
So, right. So, but from a sort of personality point of view, Red Bull must be feeling sick. I mean, they did the Honda deal, which I think took Renault by surprise. Since then, Missed Apex understands that Renault have delivered a severely underpowered and unreliable power unit, which sounds a little bit tit for tat. Yeah, they've stolen their star driver, their star man, their race winner. They've kicked out the Toro Rosso junior driver. I mean, like, it's all out war. It really is.
Yeah, well, but we've seen this pattern. We saw it at Toro Rosso last year with Renault and the problems with the spares and the FIA actually having to, you know, kind of get involved in the periphery. But I think the interesting thing for Ricciardo, per se, is that he's looking at, as you already said, he's looking at being on a team that's not going to give him a world championship in the next couple of years. So he might as well go to a team where he's going to have better chemistry with his teammate and make lots of money and be happy. And Renault, when they have been proper manufacturers and really brought it to the table, have been very, very, very successful. So I think it's actually kind of a good bet for them.
And, you know, the Renault management will do anything for you if you need a safety car or M&M's in your room. You know, they'll help you out. They're just good guys. Tony, Thunderbeast Barnard. It's all right to use your real name, isn't it? How's the live chat doing you're looking after?
Evangelos says that panel looks like an F1 Comic-Con.
Joshua Geek says this looks a lot like a press conference. And well done, Baku. Look, podcast groupies. Going with the conversation we were just having there, Artemy X, Daniel is just sure that Red Bull is not going to let him win a championship, even if the car will be championship winning. And he's only as fast as Max and not faster.
I've just been told to stand up, sorry.
No, I think they're saying move the microphone closer to your mouth, but you've elevated your whole body and the mouth to microphone ratio hasn't changed.
Can I lean? Is that all right?
And he's only as fast as Max and not faster, in brackets, even though much more reliable, so he took a tiny chance over zero chance.
Okay, hey, let's get an opinion here from Mr. Brundle. Who's faster, Max or Daniel? Put you on the spot.
Oh, okay, it's good to get involved with the show. Oh, the staff is quicker over one lap, isn't he? I think. Yeah.
But the kid's a bit of a nutter. So you can, so, you know, you could sort of chance it over a season, couldn't you? But it's not no chance, is it, of beating him? Because every so often he'll just do something a bit mental.
Surely Verstappen's not going to just keep continually crashing forever.
Exactly. And he'll grow up. And I think, you know, if Ricciardo feels that he's never going to be the lead driver, I guess, lead driver position when the manufacturer is a better option, a la Lewis Hamilton, and he obviously reckons that the money's behind Renault to take them to the top and compete with Mercedes eventually.
And even if he was given equal status officially at Red Bull, if he's not getting equal money, then he's not going to feel like he's number one equal, is he?
Those guys are all picked up when they're kids, right? And taken all the way through the Red Bull process. So they'll have a precedent on the financial side as well that runs all the way back through to when they were doing, you know, F3 and everything like that. So it's kind of like, it's so similar to Hamilton's situation where you break free of the young driver stuff and then move to the big manufacturer.
Do you think it's interesting that now we've seen both signs and now Ricciardo leave Verstappen's orbit? Do you think that just says something about the difficulty, perhaps, of working with him?
Very celestial kind of way to look at it. Yeah, it's leave Verstappen's orbit. Sorry, what was the question? I got caught up in your...
Well, we've seen now with Ricciardo departing, two fairly good drivers,
yeah,
basically leaving Red Bull,
yeah,
and Max still being there.
Definitely. Well, so Max obviously is, I can imagine he'd be a pretty difficult teammate to be across the garage with because he's sort of hard line, isn't he, and never really apologizes for anything. I know Carlos didn't get on too well with him, which is what's potentially holding him back from that seat.
And their dads apparently as well.
Yeah, well, you can tell that, I mean, I know that story on that one, but you can...
Oh.
you can tell that, yeah, that would be a pretty tricky garage to be in, but there are no easy garages to be in Formula One. You know, you can imagine, you know, sharing with Raikkonen, it would be, or any of these guys.
Yeah, but again,
ferocious.
You know, Raikkonen, he'll do anything for you, won't he? If you need a pit stop, you need a barrier,
you need an ice cream.
He'll chuck it in for you. Let's just hear from our terrible quizmaster, Chris Catman Turner. Did you have a comment, mate?
Yeah, I was just going to say that so Renault have left the sport quite a few times and come back in. Every single time that they've come back in, they've won the World Championship eventually. So
is that going to be a quiz question? Do I need to remember that? Is that there is a live quiz coming in, so make sure you tune out for that. Chris?
It's a good point that Catman brings up, and what I was going to bring up sort of earlier, which is, you know, we've got to remember that Renault are really only in their second season back properly in F1. When they came back in 2016, that was effectively just a year old car that was painted in yellow and wasn't really yet Renault's work. And so they're basically 2 years down the development line. And now they've got a bit of extra cash. I think it's something like somewhere in the region of $5 million since they quit Formula E to put into the Formula One program. So that extra resource is just going to go into the development.
$5 million. That'll pay for like the Cokes.
Well, that, yeah.
The coffee cups, a serious step up.
But when we're dealing with a team that has admitted that it has a third of the resource and the infrastructure of a team like Mercedes or Ferrari, that's going to make a big difference.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because it's not like Renault as a firm worldwide, they have the money to put into it, but they don't want to just do what Mercedes do, which is power through and have 1,000 engineers working on 18 different problems.
Yeah, well, they are not the same size, and they are more complicated because of their partnership with Nissan than Mercedes is. Mercedes has sort of the corporate behemoth. Renault is big, but they don't play on the same field, I believe, is Mercedes.
Why don't we've got an informed F1 audience in front of us. Why don't we get their opinion? So firstly, hands up, who thinks Daniel Ricciardo has made the right decision to move to Renault? Show of hands.
Oh, I know, quite a few.
It's probably two-thirds, most actually, isn't it? Right, because personally, I don't think it's the right move. I think Red Bull know what they're doing. And I think that Honda is finally going to come slightly good. You disagree with me, Chris?
No, I honestly don't know what to think about next year because where Red Bull will be will entirely depend on what Honda do.
Yeah.
And
you've got to assume
that Renault have got something good in the works to entice someone like Daniel, someone of Daniel's caliber to join the team. So It's sort of six of one, half dozen the other.
Money. I think the audience money. Money.
That's what the extra money. 5 mils for, yeah. Just to pay Daniel.
You can imagine him in an interview saying, so what's attracted you to Renault? Well, you know, I like the yellow suits. They've got a plan. They've given me lots of money, and I like lots of money. You can just imagine him admitting to that, couldn't you?
So, the working environment, I think, is going to be something quite big as well. Because, I mean, we've alluded to Max potentially being a difficult teammate. He probably feels the team is a bit Max-oriented.
I think that's one of the key things.
Yeah.
I think a couple of years against Hülkenberg, who's pretty well regarded, but Ricciardo will back himself to beat him.
Okay, that's my next question for the audience, actually. Okay. Who thinks that Daniel Ricciardo will beat Hülkenberg in a straight fight next season? Everyone. I think everyone's
but
in agreement with that.
I think being teammates with Ricciardo will not hurt Hülkenberg in any way, because I think he'll either be very, very close to him or beat him on the right occasion. I think they'll actually be quite closely matched, but it'll finally be a really good way of working out just how good Nico Hülkenberg is. Because we always talk about him as somebody who deserves a good car, but he's never really had a teammate that has properly pushed him. And that we know that how good they are.
Perez!
So, yeah, but...
Really?
But, oh, this really is... Yeah, but that was at a bad time.
I can't believe you're wrong in real life as well. I thought it was I thought it was just a Skype artifact.
Would you put Perez on the same level as Daniel Ricciardo?
Yes.
No.
Real? Wow. Oh.
All right, who would put Perez on the same level as Daniel Ricciardo? Anyone?
What? Look at that. Who's wrong in real life now?
But I was first. Okay.
Hey.
All right then. So look, I've been obviously talking to Matt on Skype a lot. Let's test if that lag that we have on the live stream is really Skype or if it's in real life. Okay then. So where does that leave Signs?
Signs.
It's real. It's a real life lag. It's not. Apologies to Microsoft. All right, sorry.
No. Signs, by all accounts, might be headed to McLaren.
Oh, this is brilliant, isn't it? Everything is shuffling now, isn't it?
Yeah.
If I was Red Bull. I don't think I'd race Ricciardo for the rest of the summer. If he really has taken them by surprise like that to their deadly rivals. Ricciardo has done the equivalent of dating your wife while you're still living with her, getting divorced. That's what that feels like.
Or Red Bull has done the equivalent to him.
Maybe.
I mean, basically they said, we've met this new person and we like them better than you. And I think it's interesting. Honda could come good with Red Bull. I see it as being a possibility, but I feel like they have a bigger problem, which is where they're going to find another driver as good as him to partner with Max and pick up those points that they need. I think they might have put themselves up against the wall a little bit, especially chasing the Constructors' Championship when Honda finally gets its act together.
See, Chris, I think Vettel might have something of the Vettels about him, where actually he doesn't want a quick teammate. So basically, he'll be getting Massa out of retirement.
You mean Verstappen?
Verstappen, sorry, what did I say?
Yeah. Vettel.
Vettel.
Vettel's
so
got
I said Vettel's got some of the Vettels about him.
Yes.
I did this last week. when we were explaining, I was talking about the pit stops with Raikkonen, Bottas and everything. And then Brad sends me a text going, everyone's Bottas. Why is everyone Bottas? I had just said Bottas for everyone, you know.
It happens.
So go on, Chris.
On the side seat. I mean, by all rights, Sainz should be the one getting that seat. He was on loan to Renault by Red Bull with the promise that, you know, if a seat comes up, you'll be the one to get it. But suddenly, since then, Nico Hülkenberg's rather spanked him a little bit at Renault. And also Pierre Gasly's come along and has done a really, really great job in the Toro Rosso. He's impressed really well. And he's got good knowledge of that power unit now, which I think will be quite crucial for their first season with Red Bull. And that will come in handy. So I think it's going to be Gasly who ends up getting that seat, and Sainz will either end up at McLaren or shafted.
He's out in the cold, isn't he? Potentially,
he is a little bit, yeah. Because
Chris, hang on, Catman's just what do you reckon?
Oh,
why are you shaking your head?
Well, I think he probably will get this seat, but unfortunately, the only thing he's managed to do is beat Brendan Hartley. So I'm not entirely convinced that he's got all the right stuff so far. He's been very good in certain races, but I've not seen that wow factor just yet.
The thing is, Toro Rosso's had a very up and down season, and they don't quite get it right all the time. And you can tell when they've got it right. And
when
in those races,
powerful engine is when they get it right.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I mean, you look at what he did in Hungary in the qualifying there. You know, that was a really very impressive race as well. You know, he wasn't a lap down by the end of the race, which in today's Formula One, where there is nearly 2 seconds between the top three teams and the rest of the field, is quite impressive. And there, it's not like, you know, there was no...
Oh, this is killing me. I haven't got control of his fader. Not in the shed. Yeah. I can just whack him off. Right. Just whack him off in the shed. This show is safe for work. Playing this with kids in the background. Have you noticed we've dropped the safe for work, all right? Just to take the pressure off.
Recently.
We will try to be safe for work.
So, if we're going to talk about the driver's market...
I do want the live stream's opinion first. Can we do that?
Oh, yeah. Go right ahead, by all means.
Excuse me, I'm lost. I wasn't ready for that. All right, Corey Garton. Correct decision for DR. Red Bull Racing will not give him the backing he deserves. Sujith Nara. Also, Helmut Marko is not in DR's camp, so I'm sure that was palpable and not comfortable. Rob Standen signs as the biggest loser in this situation.
Agree.
Yeah.
Trevor.
I'm sure he means that in a way of like losing out on a seat.
Yeah.
Not just you personally, Carlos, are a massive loser.
Trevor WL1 signs to Haas.
That's an interesting one that I have not heard, because I think everybody's about linked to that Haas seat at the moment. There's about five or six drivers who could end up in that car.
Let's hear from Daniel, isn't it? Yeah, you've got the best chat room name, which is EMH12122, which is amazing.
Memorable.
I'm just wondering whether this whole sort of silly season kickoff may actually end up indirectly helping save Brendan Hartley's career. Presuming that Gasly gets promoted, now the Toro Rosso may have to fill two extra seats.
Let's hear from Alex Brundle to chime in on that.
So, I don't like the whole save his career, because, you know, there are races that happen other than F1.
Yeah.
Explain in detail.
Please explain how Brendan Hartley is a world champion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I think it's kind of everybody always... Sorry to completely swerve the point, by the way, into my own personal agenda. Just
wet bias.
You can do it directly into a camera if you like.
Stare directly down the lens. Hello, you guys. I've got something to tell you. Their career does continue. despite not being in a single seater. Yeah. Sorry, I know.
Why would you possibly be sensitive?
You were sat in exactly the wrong place to make that particular comment just behind Alex Brundle.
Save his F1 career. In the bracket.
Yeah, the thing with, but he's, like, everyone's only going to remember this short-lived, potentially F1 career rather than the amazing career as a racing driver he's had so far. And people will only remember the F1 career, which I think is quite sad for him.
Well, if they're only F1 fans.
Yeah, but most people are only F1. Like, I know there's a big motorsporting fan, you know.
Let's not forget that he also raced in the Cambridge round of the British Rental Car Championship in 2011.
I hear that's a very poorly run event.
Can I answer the question from Daniel, though?
Yeah.
Which was that if it might save his career. This is the sort of second time in a short period of time that the Red Bull Young Driver Program has been quite exposed. Because when they kicked out Daniil and they ended up, you know, having to put Gasly and Hartley in the car, like, they put somebody in the car that they kicked off the program 6 or 7 years before that. That showed a massive flaw in the system. And right now, they've got nobody in the program that's ready to replace either Gasly or Hartley. There's all this talk about Dan Ticktum, but he's not going to be able to get enough points to get the super license.
Two words, Lando Norris.
See, this is the thing. They already made a sort of vie for him, didn't they? But why on earth would McLaren... What sort of price range James Key. Exactly.
You're welcome. Not only Norris, but Summers and I were having an extensive 6-hour chat about the lateral tire stress last night.
I just wish you wouldn't record it. That's the thing.
Yeah. and it did come up, and they now have a lot of leverage. And it may not just be Norris. If we're talking about Sainz going to fulfill his bromance partner Alonso at McLaren, you could also potentially see Van Dorn and Norris at Toro Rosso next year.
Kubica won't get a race seat.
Kubica is in thrall to Stroll as a test driver.
I heard that Kubica was going to be Stroll's teammate, because when it's going to be for Stroll, he actually gets on with Kubica really well, and they've almost developed into a bit of a pro-am relationship where the professional driver latches onto a wealthy amateur and then takes them to a different team. I'm being serious.
So, are they going to give up Perez and his money though?
Didn't know what you got yourself into, did you? Should have listened to the show.
I love it. So I've just got images of Bob Barker turning up for Williams next time.
Would they give up Perez's money as well? Because I don't get the feeling that Perez would be happy to stay on as like a test driver just for them to keep their money, whereas Kubica probably would stay as a test driver and they get to keep his money.
I think it depends how much Mr. Stroll opens his wallet.
That's a good point, yeah.
I mean, his money could buy the sport, let alone that team. So it's a case of how much he's willing to fund them. But
it's amazing. This is all shuffling around and it's all kicking off now. Thank you so much for the content, Daniel Cardo. This is, you know, it's amazing. Have you got any other connotations that shuffle down the field?
Well, because if the Force Indies are going to end up with, you know, strolling, that leaves Esteban Ocon sort of out of the water a little bit, and he might end up having to settle for a Williams drive, which is not great news because he should be moving up, not backwards down the grid, because he's a very talented racing driver.
Yeah, but Williams have the smartest dressed engineers, so surely that's got to count for something, hasn't it?
Oh, 100%. okay. I'm trying to think who else might end up being
George Russell.
Left out.
George Russell,
yeah,
Williams,
because it depends. You know, you can't imagine that Williams are going to keep Sorokin on. So they might take a punt on Russell, maybe, and partner him with Ocon.
And finally, how about Esteban Ocon having the rug pulled from under him? He was like all happily thinking he was on his way to Enstone, and then suddenly there's an Australian in his seat.
That would have been really great,
Chris,
for him.
Chris, we're going to move on for timing, and we're going to have a look at the mid-season championship with another great sting from Soundman Ash. Okay, let's have another go at the correct volume. No, I gave you three buttons to press. No, the whole bumper. Thank you for your help. I really appreciate it. So, look, the main battle this season is Ferrari versus Hamilton. Essentially, sorry.
What did I say?
It is Ferrari versus Hamilton. Yeah. I've done a Freudian slip.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So it is Vettel versus Hamilton, really, isn't it? Are there any Ferrari fans at all here? One, two, oh, God, how
Three
can you
people.
Do it?
3% of the Missed Apex audience.
This is why I feel comfortable saying this. Like, how does it feel supporting Ferrari? It's like supporting the Death Star. Like literally, Vettel was on the light side. He was bubbly with Red Bull, wasn't he? And then he was like, you know, come over. And now he's all like Darth Vader.
It has one very key weakness that you only have to fire a very small bullet into a small hole to destroy it.
You failed me for the last time, Arriba Bene. But yeah.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
So, I mean, my son, you were there, weren't you, Nick? My son, he turned around to me and said, Daddy, do Ferrari fans love their children? And I said, no, son. Not like we do. Not like we do. Okay, so how do we think that battle's going, Chris? It's on paper, until the last two races, it was neck and neck.
Yeah, it really was. I feel like there are kind of three points to this about this championship because they've been so evenly matched. You kind of have to break it down to the car, the team, and the driver. And of the latter of those three points, you'd say that Lewis has been doing the better job. Because I would argue that the car is not as good across the season as the Ferrari. And yet he is the one leading the championship by quite some margin.
I'm looking to Summers because he's going to tell us for sure later. I don't want to say anything stupid.
In terms of the tip, I feel like Seb has let his team down more than the team has let him down, and the team has let Lewis down more than Lewis has let him down. Or maybe the car has let him down. Actually, no, both, because they've had like some dodgy strategy calls and the car hasn't been quite as good. So
I'm in full agreement with Chris on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna stop you there so we can get a coherent sentence, Brad.
Yeah, no, I actually really agree with what Chris was saying. I think Vettel has thrown away points and Hamilton has managed to stay in the fight despite the team or the car throwing away points for him.
Yeah.
So, and in terms of the pace of the two cars relative, I'm also very interested to hear what Summer says, but I've seen, figures from the super times where they analyze the fastest lap of the weekend, where they're so close, you know, a fraction of a percent, difference in ultimate pace.
It has swung sort of from race to race massively though, because you look at Silverstone where the top three were split by a tenth of a second. And then suddenly we go to Germany and Ferrari have got half second just on the straights.
Chompitz, let's hear from you because you sound like you're from the telly.
Yeah,
like,
I
honestly,
do.
Yeah. That is the best reason to have an American on. As soon as you start talking, people pay, oh, the telly's on.
Yeah, I love
instant
being,
authority.
Yeah,
I love it.
Just being able to say words and people love it. It's fantastic. I don't actually have to come up with anything. I just have to say words out of my mouth and it's all good. No, I think that if we, depending upon what happens with the season, you're going to look back at the last two races, and that could be very well where Ferrari gave up their biggest advantage over Mercedes. One with Vettel taking himself out, and then with the strategy that ultimately happened in Hungary, because I don't believe they had the optimal strategy for Vettel to win the race. And they had the biggest car advantage. If you look at the Friday practice, if you look at the dry times, they had the biggest advantage and they managed to come away losing points to Mercedes.
Now hang on a minute, Matt. No. You told me you had a system on a Friday of basically predicting who was going to win the race based on Friday practice.
That's not true at all.
That's exactly what you said. You said, I have magic predictive powers from Friday practice and I can tell who's going to be. What do you look for? Because I watch Friday practice and I just see racing cars going round and round.
Yes.
What is it you're looking for on a Friday?
Well, you look, what you do is you look at the lap times, and you look specifically on Friday, you look at the lap times where they run, 10, 12, 15 laps in a row on old tires, and you look at, you sort of look for their average pace. So you have to look out for laps that they encounter traffic or they're purposely told to slow down.
Sorry, I switched off the tires. Yeah. Is this now a tire chat?
No, not at all. And then what you do is you sort of look at what you would consider their average race pace. So you say, how fast can they go around the track on average? And you can figure that out. You can get an idea of the order, if all not right. specific numbers.
Well, let me know before I put my bets on. My wife is here. Right. Before I put my fake bets on with pretend money. Tony, what's the chat room saying there?
Ferrari fans, it's just the screen filled up with grazie ragazzi, grazie.
Adrenalina.
So, Hamilton gets a lot of grief for his, being very emotional and reacting to things. Vettel, in German, or in Italian, I think, after the Silverstone Grand Prix, I'm told, I didn't translate it myself, was basically screaming, in their backyard. Right. Imagine the grief Lewis Hamilton would have got in Germany if he was saying that. We got a comment from Felix. What's up, buddy? But you're putting your hand up and looking at me and waving.
I was really afraid that the live stream was down, but no, it's actually working.
Felix Bowen, our webmaster, everyone. There we go. Thank you very much. You made the show. He's the one that makes everything look pretty. He came up with the logo up here. Basically, any time I want to do anything with my website, Felix, can I add this? He goes, ugh, that's disgusting. Make it look like IKEA, because he's from Sweden. Okay, then. So, got Tony?
Who's putting these comments in? Is it you, Felix? Right, Felix put, right, let's have a poll. Hashtag Team Chris versus hashtag Team Anti Chris. Which is one T away from a totally different hashtag.
what's the result so far?
Miraculously, Team Chris, Team Chris, Team Chris, Chris, Team Chris, Team Chris, Team Chris, Team.
They've missed.
I don't believe this. Have you got all your mates or your? Is it
I have
your family on the live stream.
They have no idea that I really do this a lot. So.
Okay, then let's go to our live audience. Then who's going to win the championship? Vettel. Yeah. You just
one.
Just
one.
At Lewis Hamilton, then presumably everybody else. Yeah, I think it's. I personally believe. Go on.
Does that come down to whether Ferrari and Sebastian gets his act together, or whether Mercedes get their act together and properly start, letting
go? Okay, so the way I see it at the moment is that that Mercedes have the package with the overall best potential, and that will be the case going through the season. Can't wait for someone to tell me how wrong I am. But it could come down to the number twos, because this is, I think, the first time we've seen a battle between two front-running teams where they're both willing to put their number twos on the line. Because I think Mercedes, that was a big Freudian slip from Toto. They've definitely put all their eggs in the Hamilton basket. They're just a bit less blatant about it. But I would love to see, like we were talking about doing an event where we have our wives in a go-kart. It's a team event. And the winner is not us. The winner is who can, block everybody else to get their wife to the finish line. I think that would be quite a fun karting event. And gives me a chance to beat Brad. But anyway.
Becca's very competitive. That would be a good fight.
So this is going to be the first time, I think, we see two top teams actually deploying their number twos. And I think they've got to stop pretending. At some point, Mercedes have got to drop the act and go, yes, we're using Bottas to help Hamilton win.
I don't think that they are necessarily.
Oh, they've got to, though. Ferrari are doing it.
No, because Mercedes wants the Constructors' Championship. And I think the best thing about the season is how close it is between the top two manufacturers. That's going to be the real story.
Does anyone care who wins the manufacturer's championship from a viewer point of view, from a paying audience point of view?
No, but the manufacturers care who wins the... It matters. Who wins the constructors' championship?
Daniel, go on.
So it's not all just about the individuals, it's about the teams as well. So if they, you know, like us, there's only, what, the rare three Ferrari fans in this entire group. We've got to have something
evil
to cling
Ferrari
on
fans.
To.
You forgot, you left
oh,
that out.
Evil
sorry.
Ferrari, yeah, yeah. We've got to have something to cling on to, even if our man doesn't get it.
Okay, well, put it this way. Go on, Matt.
More to the point, the people who write the checks for the teams care who wins the constructors.
Exactly. It's where the money comes
fair
from.
Fair enough. But when we were covering Formula E, there was a championship rundown with the final round at Battersea, where Lucas Degrassi was fighting with
Sebastian Buemi.
Right. But do you remember two races previously? I'm forgetting the Apt, who's Daniel Apt.
Yeah.
Was second or third. He wanted the podium and he didn't let Lucas Degrassi pass him for the sake of the championship. Had he let him pass, Degrassi would have won the championship.
Yeah.
And on the final day when we were at Battersea, instead of the Renault boys celebrating, it would have been his teammates celebrating. Surely Bottas wants to see the Mercedes guys cheering Lewis Hamilton at the end and not the Ferrari guys cheering on Sebastian Vettel. I feel like that was ranty enough for a round of applause or something. It felt like it was
applaud,
going there.
Don't applaud that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The crucial thing about that one, though, was that Daniel did actually try and let Lucas buy, and Lucas kind of refused, which was the, hindsight's a wonderful thing. It was the wrong decision.
Can I add a driver's perspective on that thing? Because it might not be the answer that you expect.
Go on.
I think a driver will publicly say that, yeah, I'd rather my teammate won than the guy from the other team won. I think privately, they'd rather the guy from the other team won because it makes them look less bad. It doesn't look as bad if there was someone from a different team who actually took the overall win because your car wasn't capable of it anyway.
So, of course, that has almost nothing to do with whether or not Mercedes is calculatedly sacrificing Bottas' finishing position in order to aid Hamilton, which I don't really believe they have done yet.
Fair enough. Okay, let's get more of a driver's perspective. Let's do what you and I have been wanting to do since the beginning and get rid of Chris from the panel. Just temporarily, so we can bring up Alex to come and talk to Bradley about some driving stuff. Alex Grundle, everyone. LMP1.
This is very unusual for me because I'm never an interviewer, so I'm going to do my very best to...
That's fine, I'll carry you.
Good. I'm going to need it. So welcome, Alex. So for those of you who don't know, I've known Alex for quite a long time. We've worked together, or we used to work together in our formative years when Alex was actually already a very experienced race driver, and I definitely wasn't. And so basically, at the moment, you're racing LMP1, for Manor.
Manor. Yeah. Well remembered. Yeah.
In a Ginetta.
In a Ginetta.
And so just for the time being, what's the next race? What have you got coming up soon?
Well, we were supposed to have Silverstone, but then we have a bit of an issue with engines.
Okay.
So we're doing the full WEC, so we'll end up in Fuji next.
Okay.
Which is a fair period into the future, but we're testing next week. So
right now you're racing in something extremely fast.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past you've raced various other cars.
Like yeah.
A lot of different types.
Some
so
perilously slow stuff, yeah.
So I'm gonna just try and run through what I think you've driven, and I'd like you to fill in the gaps of any additional cars you might have driven, and then we'll just delve into how some of them are different to drive from others.
I'll try and remember my own career without notes.
Okay, so I assume you've done some karting. Did you do that before T-Cars?
Yeah, nothing at Buckmore Park, though.
Okay. Yeah. Is that a lie?
It's on.
So, I did a bit of karting before T-Cars. It's hard to jump back, isn't it, from cars to karts.
But you still do some karting nowadays.
Yeah, I know, the occasional. I was at Wilton Mill the other day getting some bruises. It was fine.
Brad, are you using this as an opportunity to scope out Alex for the karting later? I asked for
maybe
a segment.
Subconsciously.
Exactly how many days, hours and minutes have you done? You know?
Okay, so for everyone here, what's a T-car? Because that's something that stopped a long time ago.
Yeah. Shortly after I did it, actually. Yeah, they were kind of tubular frame, mountain 2-litre touring cars that, yeah, didn't keep their bodywork on very well.
And you could drive them from a very young age. How old were you when you drove them?
Yeah, I mean, I could never really drive them, but they could be driven from a young age, yes.
Is it around 14?
Yeah, 14 years old. Yeah, you could start doing that kind of thing. It was that, or Ginetta Juniors, really, was kind of the path you went along at that age. Yeah.
And And from that, you then went into single-seaters.
Single-seaters.
Formula Palmer Audi.
Yeah, Palmer Audi.
Another defunct series now, but it was very popular in its heyday.
Alex, are you cursed? All the series you go into just, get cancelled.
Just slowly sinking motorsport championships one at a time. Yeah, did that. That finished. Then did Formula 2 and that finished.
I'm just going to drag
British
you back.
F3.
Just briefly, the Formula Palmer Audi, how was that different to drive to the T-car?
Kind of a lot more power. I actually remember going along the back straight at Snett with my mouth wide open. You were in that race, actually, I think.
I was going to mention, I've got in brackets here, we had one race weekend together.
Who won?
Well, Alex didn't finish one or two of the races, if I remember. I remember seeing you in the barrier down the main street.
Yeah, what did I do? Oh, I think someone tried to go around the outside of me. And I had problems with that when I was a kid. Big problems. Well, it was a problem for both of us because we both ended up.
I was at the opposite end of the grid in that particular race to you. Yeah. So Formula Palmer, that's big slicks, big fat slicks,
big
not
fat
a lot
slicks.
Of aero. So you've gone from go-karts, obviously, slicks, but no aero. It's all T-cars.
And turbo power. So you had to do the old digital
throttle. So the T-car was normally aspirated.
Normally aspirated to turbo, which is a big deal.
We've already got some pretty different types of things, different things to drive, even from your first two of quite a long list of cars.
Yeah.
So, would you say, before we carry on to the faster stuff, have these things begun to shape the way you drive a car?
Oh, definitely. I mean, for example, the turbo stuff we were just talking about, when you move from a turbo car to a naturally aspirated, there's a, don't like try and stay, just like, oh wait, we can get your coffee or something, but
did I just get burned?
The turbo stuff, you bring in the power underneath the turbo and the naturally aspirated power, and then you wait for ages and then you bring in the turbo. So when you move back to an naturally aspirated car, that's really hard to say under pressure. You jump back in and then you put imaginary turbos in all of the throttle traces, which you have to get rid of slowly. For example, when I jumped back into British F3, I was putting step changes in all my throttle pickups.
Okay, so that was the next thing then. So from Formula Palmer Audi, and pretty good success in FPA. Did you win some races?
Yeah, podiums. And I ended up sixth or something, I think. Loads of podiums and some poles, and then it was just sort of downhill from there.
So then British Formula 3, we're talking... when we talk about...
Brad, let me just step that up, because obviously we're not as educated as you. So we're basically going from things I haven't heard of to things I've now sort of heard of. So now we're now getting into the point where you're in and amongst the guys who are all vying to go into Formula 1.
Still outside Formula 1 though, so it's, in that.
So does it go, right, for the really stupid, right, okay, so Formula 1, we're going to go for 2 next?
It is now in fact Formula 2. Yeah.
Formula 2, Formula 3, and then there are more regional versions of those championships. Is that right? So like the British Formula 3.
Yeah, so you've got Brit F3, but then it's kind of that area of motorsport which is a real mess, because you're still at the pace of the pyramid where there are so many drivers that can actually kind of, by hook or by crook, afford to do that. So it's a massive marketplace. So every so often, some big motorsport entity will just fire a championship into the marketplace, like British F4, then MSA F4, and then they'll take British F3 and bin it off and make new cars, or European F3. So there's an amount of money then in the marketplace from these young drivers, their mums, their dads, their sponsors, that everyone's just trying to scoop.
Now, I was going to ask, because it's kind of, it is very parent driven at that point. And as somebody who has taken their 3-year-old to a go-kart track and just watched him, because he wasn't big enough to turn the wheel, relentlessly crash over and over again. My wife's looking at me into the same. And I'm like, no, turn more.
You gotta believe. He's not listening, is he? You gotta believe.
but what I mean is, it's very pushy parents. I'm just interested what that atmosphere is like, because you must be, what, 14, 15 at that sort of time?
So dads learn to be racing dads while kids learn to be racing drivers. And it kind of, you kind of meet in the middle in a kind of majestic arc.
Is it like football? Is there a lot of yelling?
More kind of, there was some funny stuff that happened, other dads coming up to you and telling you that you shouldn't have hit their kid or some stuff like that. But you're such a little adrenaline fueled 8-year-old at the time, you just don't really care.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to move through that system. But to be honest, it doesn't get any better. It's just, the money gets more, but then occasionally people still shout at you for hitting their kid. That's how it rolls.
I think we just got a comment from the live stream there, T.
Question from Matthew Gruff. Can Alex give a brief description of what it's like driving a P1 car, downforce, braking, speed, etc.?
So I think, Brad, that's the sort of point you're getting onto now, isn't it? Now.
Yeah, so we're getting onto the kind of quicker end of things. Do you want me to let Alex answer that?
Yeah, go on then.
It's... So you get to the speed where stuff goes narrow and scenery goes blurry and then everything changes. And that's the big thing about driving an LMP1, especially in the dark. The dark changes your life in a sports car because it just makes everything. I think Jenson Button at this year's Le Mans said it feels about 400 miles an hour, and he's not far away from the truth. Because you take away so much of the information, and when you've got less information, everything feels faster. But I mean, to be honest, this year it was kind of sketchy because we had some things breaking and stuff, you know, kind of falling off and all of that kind of thing. So we
always
going,
nice to have that uncertainty yeah, exactly. on the Mulsanne.
So there's a little bit of kind of you're going through the Porsche curves and the load is just that's the biggest sensation that you feel when you're driving a prototype at high speed. The Venturi is so huge and the amount of downforce and load is so big that it's just the energy, the sensation of energy going through the car, I can't describe. It's just massive.
So just dragging you back to kind of, I guess, around the middle of your formative years. So you made a step into British Formula 3. And yeah. So you've now gone from normally aspirated, then into a turbocharged car, and now we're back into normally aspirated again.
Yeah.
And this is the old British F3 cars before it turned to the current ones, which for confusion are an actual old Formula 4 car. But anyway.
Exactly. The good ones with the...
So you've now got a car which has probably more grip than power yeah. relative to some of the previous cars. So how did that compare, jumping from FPA so that's, then into that car?
You know, that's an FPA car was a massive turbo with a Recaro strapped to it. And then this thing was just an Airfix model turned upside down with, you know, a lawnmower engine in the back. So it's just a complete different ballpark.
So once again, you've had to learn a different way of driving a car. You're now having to drive using the aero.
Yeah, so driver using the aero. So it's all about minimum brake pressure, U style, if anybody is a...
No, explain that.
Okay. So in a very, very high power car, you do something that's called V style, which we get awfully excited about. Essentially, it's brake deep. I've got no grip in the middle, so I turn the car, and then I point the car nice and straight, and then I bring all of my power in and I use the traction. I lock my diff up and I get out. Whereas a car that can carry speed through the middle, you drive a U, which is get off the brakes and roll speed through the middle because I haven't got enough power to drive the car
uh-huh.
out through the exit. So it's a lot less complicated than we make it sound.
But by this point,
but you know, if
no,
we...
that makes that's really helpful.
It's quite easy, but don't tell anyone. They won't pay us.
So by the time you're kind of 17, 18 years old, you know, kind of mid to late teens, you've had a very big experience of completely different styles that you've had to learn and adapt to.
Yes.
So then when you jump in the bigger things, the faster things.
The process is the important bit. So it's learning how to go to jump in this and then learn the process of that as quickly as possible. So the first time, couple of times you adapt, you're really slow and it might take you like a whole season to figure it out. But then you learn the process of working with the data and figuring out what this thing, how do I tickle it immediately? And then you can, you know, improve. That's the big deal.
And so the reason that I'm asking you all these things, just to build to the bigger point, is someone who hasn't had the opportunity to drive such a varied junior career, someone who's maybe been in only naturally aspirated cars, for example, when they get spat out into something that's very, very fast, like whether it's Formula 2 or I don't know, someone finds their way into a Formula 1 seat without that much...
if they stroll into a Formula 1 seat.
Potentially. how much
well, they
more
need
difficult...
They need a good pro, don't they, for that?
Exactly. my main point is, do you think that whole background of it being so varied and you having to adapt to something different every time you step to the next level... Does it then just make the final transitions, like going into a very fast LMP1 car, that much easier?
Well, that's why we see kind of guys like... Do you remember Kobayashi before he went to Formula 1?
Legend.
Yeah, yeah. Legend. And, you know, he now does good stuff in a Toyota prototype. But he was kind of a bit ish, wasn't he, in GP2? But he'd sort of been out doing a bit of Super Formula and all sorts of different various bits and some Japanese F3 and all that kind of thing. That's why I think he got on well when he jumped in an F1 car, because he'd learned how to sort of drive this and that or whatever. So,
brilliant. Final point from you, Brad, before we... thankfully, you've taken up a lot of the tech time time here, Alex, which is
sorry
great.
Sorry to swallow
no,
that.
No, it's brilliant because it means we'll all be wide awake for the karting. Yeah, do you want to just wrap up?
Yeah, so I did have just one last thing, and that was be honest about actually how much practice have you done at Butmore Park over the years?
Well, I wasn't invited to the practice session this morning. I was given specific instructions to turn up after 10.
Although there wasn't a practice session.
It was last night.
It was
a free practice session.
How much do you weigh?
Is he lying? What, 89 kilos I weigh?
Oh my goodness. I reckon he's 67 for the kitty.
65, yeah.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Alex Brundle, thank you so much for your time. Alex Brundle, thanks for...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's get up. Let's get up. The tech man from Birmingham, motorsport.com's Matthew Summerfield. You can have my chair.
Yes. Okay. No, I feel bad. I feel like we should have just invited everyone to breakfast with us because we basically had this chat this morning. But given the fact that we're halfway through the season and given the fact that Spanners is already telling me I need to hurry up and wrap this thing.
I'm so bored already.
I haven't even spoken yet.
I think it would probably be good to sort of set, just have a look at the outline of the season, and let's just focus on the Ferrari and the Mercedes. So where were we when the season began with those two manufacturers?
Well, I think at the start of the season, the way you have to look at it is that Ferrari went in with perhaps the better car overall as a package. Mercedes have taken a different approach in terms of development to Ferrari as well throughout the season. So we've seen... Sorry. You know me and microphones don't get on.
Do you know what? You threw away a microphone. It turned out it was just back to front.
Yeah.
So the tech man.
Yeah, can't work a microphone, but there we go. I think that the way you're looking at this season with Mercedes and Ferrari is a different approach to the development curve. Mercedes have basically hinged their whole first part of the season on their side pod development, which came a few races ago in Austria.
So is that, in a sense, you're saying that Ferrari showed up with a car that was really ready for this season, but Mercedes sort of developed into their car when they introduced this big update?
I think Ferrari had a better understanding of their car straight out of the box than Mercedes did, perhaps, and that obviously helps when you're setting up the car. Ferrari this season have obviously made changes in terms of the wheelbase, and that's something that seems to have been forgotten. Everybody last year were going that Mercedes made a mistake. They've got this extremely long wheelbase car and they're calling it a diva. And it's very difficult to work with. Yet this year, Ferrari have practically the same wheelbase, and that story has completely gone away. So, you know, to say that last year's car was purely down to those problems with the Mercedes is incorrect. I think a lot of the problem that Mercedes had last season and moving into this season is that they'd had no challenge for 3 or 4 years. You know, that they've been the best team out there on the grid. And right. All of a sudden they've got a challenge. Ferrari have made a huge leap forward, not only on the chassis side of things, but on the power unit side of things. And that's obviously had an impact on Mercedes' approach.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think that Mercedes, because they had the opportunity, as Ferrari extended or lengthened their wheelbase, Mercedes had the opportunity to make their shorter. Do you think Mercedes doesn't want to mess with the car because it's simply a harder design to deal with and they're afraid of breaking it in a way they can't fix?
It's a conceptual thing. So the wheelbase is primarily to do with aerodynamics.
Right.
We know that they run a low rate car and all of these things tie into one another. Ferrari have obviously got a higher rate car, but they are not to the extreme of Red Bull, who run a much shorter car than both of them. And I think what you find interesting is when you pick up on comments like Andy Green from Force India, when he mentions the fact that obviously they take on board the Ferrari power unit, but they also take Mercedes gearbox. Now that defines the wheelbase of their car. The only way they can then shorten their car is by running a shorter wheelbase from the front end of the car. And Andy's basically saying, well, you know, we're forced into that direction by Mercedes because we're purchasing their equipment. And as in that respect, everybody was talking this at the start of this season of Ferrari basically, Haas having a Ferrari copy from last year. Which isn't the case because we're talking of a car that now has the same length gearbox as the Ferrari Works team. So there's all these small nuances between the designs of these cars. Yes, Chris?
Wasn't the deal with the Haas at the beginning of the season largely down to the fact that they had sort of used elements of Ferrari's front suspension, which basically dictates most of the front aero, and that's where this all sort of came about from?
Well, most of the Haas car is dictated by the parts that they're purchased from Ferrari because they do purchase, as you say, not only the rear end of the car, which is what a lot of the other teams have started to do, but they also purchase as much as they possibly can from off of the list. So they're purchasing things like the brakes, the front suspension, and as you say, that does dictate geometry and the wheelbase of the car. So yeah. Spanners.
I've got a question. Brad, are you trolling the live stream from the panel? That is unbelievable. Like, team wear. Look at your shirt. Look, Miss Apex.
Just getting properly involved.
So somebody here in the chat room, I've forgotten who it is basically asking about the Ferrari battery, this magic battery we keep hearing about. Explain in detail how Ferrari are cheating and should be thrown out of the sport. And if you guys have got any live questions, put your hand up and we'll get to you as well.
Okay, so Ferrari's battery has been the same design since 2014. This is not a new thing. It's just something that has gained attention because it's suddenly that everybody appears to think that they've got an advantage when it comes to their energy recovery system. So they've had a twin battery system since 2014. It's just the way that they've designed their battery in order to make it work more efficiently for them. I don't want to get into the whole energy recovery system because it's a bit of a minefield. And obviously we're a bit limited for time, but as we know, they have made some gains in that area. But I think as me and Matt were discussing last night, early this morning.
Without me?
Without you, you trottled off to bed. they were doing some interesting things, let's say, out of corners. That it would appear that everybody seems to think that Ferrari have made their gains at the low end of the range and they're gaining speed in the corners. But if you look at the speed trap figures, it's at the top end where they're making their gains. Chris?
I do wonder about this, actually, because how does one make a gain in terms of sort of deployment when you're basically limited on power?
Okay, so this is, again, let's debunk something. They're not limited on energy. Everybody wants to talk about 4 megajoules. They're not limited to 4 megajoules.
Okay.
They're only limited to 4 megajoules from the energy store per lap. They can take energy directly from the MGU-H to the MGU-K, and that's a fact that everybody seems to forget about. So they're always taking more than 4 megajoules. And that's again something that everybody seems to forget when they're talking about these type of articles. Now, obviously, I wrote a rather speculative piece for Motorsport because nobody knows what Ferrari are doing. They have made gains and it's quite a significant gain. But my premise is based on that they are using what's called a freeload for the MGU-H. So they are driving the turbocharger at a certain point with the MGU-H. They're overriding it and pushing the wastegate exhaust over the rear wing, stalling the rear wing. So that's where the top speed advantage may come from. It would appear that Mercedes have put their power unit, their new power unit, back a race. So have they suddenly realised what's going on in this situation? And are basically going to come to sort their issues out and maybe get on board with what Ferrari were up to?
I'm enjoying this, actually. But what's interesting to me is that quite a lot of the cars that I have been involved with, if you start trying to stall rear wings for people who are really techie, if you start trying to stall rear wings with turbo wash, then actually quite often you need, which I find quite interesting, if it's, you know, within homologated boxes and you can only change so much, you need heat protection on rear bodywork elements and that kind of thing, which takes quite a lot of development in terms of aerodynamics as well, because when you start heat protecting elements of that specific of rear wings, etc., you then start to change the way that they work aerodynamically because things get thicker and thinner, etc., etc. So how long do you think that that system would have had to have been in the works to actually generate a working system, including the aerodynamic devices that have to deal with the extra temperature?
Well, this is another chat that we had last night based around the F-duct, which obviously is a similar system in terms of stalling. And my talk with Matt was, how do you get this past somebody? How do you convince somebody that you want to spend X hundreds of thousands of pounds on something that might not actually give you a gain? Because it's an incremental thing. Yes, it might look good on paper, but when you actually put it into the real world, oftentimes it doesn't actually produce the results.
And melt the pillars.
Yeah.
Was a big thing with, was it Renault at the beginning of this year? Their rear wings were just melting off.
So Renault are doing it in the opposite direction. Renault are actually blowing the rear wing for extra performance, and they have a Kevlar protector underneath the underside of the main plane so that the main plane doesn't melt. But you'll still see it scorched at the end of a race because it's heat that you're basically putting too close to a component. So, Renault are doing what I would consider to be the opposite end of the spectrum. They're trying to gain downforce from blowing the rear wing. Whereas Ferrari are attempting to do what I would suggest was being done with the F-duct. So you're gaining a little bit of extra downforce by being able to run a higher angle of attack on the rear wing for cornering. And then just shedding some of that drag on the straights.
That's really interesting, I presume.
For some people, yes, maybe.
Thank you very much. The tech man from Birmingham, Matthew Summerfield. Thank you very much. Cheers, Summers. So, actually, Summers was, right from the beginning, so supportive because he was just a guy writing tech blogs, suddenly took off on Motorsport. When we started Missed Apex, we suddenly had a big hitter in our corner, tweeting from an account with 80 billion followers on it, and lending us an authority that we didn't deserve at the time and never will.
Still don't deserve frankly.
And what happened to my accredited journalist introduction?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, FIA accredited journalist, Matt Trumpets. Yeah. Apparently that's not a real term, but it really winds Chris up. So just use it all the time. FIA accredited journalist. What keeps you dialing a Skype call to a bunch of limeys talking about F1?
Best response I can really give that's honest is the comic XKCD. Anybody ever, any internet nerds know this? Yeah. And he's perhaps his most famous, and it's a single panel one. It's just some guy at a keyboard like this. And there's a little bubble saying, it's 3 a.m., come to bed. And the answer is, but someone is wrong on the internet. So, there you go.
And I love it. That's something that we've always said is that it's fine to debate. For example, yes. You know, with whose fault is this? we never have a racing incident. We just don't acknowledge that it could be a no-blame situation. You know, and this has been inspired by Our Marriage Darling, because it's it's the old, it's the water wife paradox, isn't it? If I put water there and you knock it over, you say, you idiot, why would you put water there? And obviously if it's the other way around, you say, you know, you idiot, watch where you're putting your hand. So yeah, okay. So
he normally says it slightly differently to that.
Oh, kick it on the floor. Well, it's normally wine on the floor, isn't it? But, you know.
Well, yeah, after last night, yeah, yeah, that seems a more apt analogy. Yeah.
But I mean, but in our house, if the house was burning, right, and we were trying to escape from the house, after we picked up our favorite child and the other one, I suppose, if we've got time, but Nicola would stop me and say, no, let's establish blame. But the house is burning. We need to leave the house. Yeah, but it was your fault, wasn't it? So fine. Yes, the fire was my fault. Okay. So that's what we do. And we have these debates so that we can genuinely kind of discuss the mechanics of the racing. And sometimes that does tie us up in knots, like Bradley with his, lanes analogy. Yeah. Did everyone enjoy that? Are you still sticking with that?
I'm standing by it with the caveat.
You're dying on that hill, are you?
I was driving down the motorway today and as someone moved across from me. In fact, just yesterday.
Yeah.
When I picked Matt up from the airport, someone nearly violated the lane system and nearly crashed into us. And it's the same. If you're driving in a straight line on a track and someone moves across towards you, that's their fault.
So basically it depends.
It depends.
Sorry, carry on.
No, well, that was it, really. I mean, I just want to thank you guys here at this live event. You've flown all the way from Brooklyn, which is amazing. Chris, you've taken a train. It's not as impressive.
No, not quite.
But the point is, you guys give up so much time on a Sunday, and you put up with me basically being the internet equivalent of like a amateur dramatics director. Like, no, none of this will do. None of this will do.
Waiting for Spanner.
Exactly. So I just wanted to say a big thank you to you guys. All right, now it is time for the Myst Apex quiz. And here is our quizmaster, Chris Catman Turner. How are you doing, Chris?
Yeah, good. I'm really pleased to be here. It's fantastic to meet you all finally.
Yeah, I mean, your quizzes, though, have been famously inaccurate, poorly thought out, and poorly delivered. What can we expect today?
Yeah, well, to be fair, that thing going into my bank account means that they should be biased towards you, I recall, surely.
All right, then, Chris. You are going to test the panel here, us four, but also, when we fall down, do feel free to go to the audience and...
Excellent.
And
that will
make
be,
them us look stupid.
Be very frequently then. That's absolutely fine.
So how's the format? What are we doing? It's not that last time where you said deliberately give the wrong answer somehow.
No, although that would have been awesome. Never mind.
No, it would have been terrible again.
So we've got three rounds today. The first one will be it's all based on the 2018 season this time. There'll be two quick fire questions, and the first will be a general knowledge. The second is a true or false.
Right.
So, we'll first go to trumpets.
We're so bad at quizzes.
I'm terrible at these. Well,
yeah, and I know nothing about F1. Are these F1 questions?
I'm afraid so.
Damn it.
I'm terrible at writing. Which driver spectacularly collided with Brendan Hartley at the beginning of the Canadian Grand Prix?
No idea. Can I steal his point?
No, go to the audience to steal
the point. From the audience, we'll go for Alex.
Stroll, wasn't it?
It was indeed in his home round.
I mean, why didn't you just guess Stroll? That would have
been... Oh, yeah. All right. Jet lag.
Here you go.
True or false? Sergei Sorokin received a penalty for driving too slowly in the French Grand Prix.
I'm going to go with true.
Absolutely, that is true.
That was just a massive kick in the nuts, wasn't it? Williams really struggling and you get a penalty for going slowly. They are trying as hard as they can. You leave them alone.
Was that under like a safety car?
Yeah, he wasn't keeping up under the safety car. We'll go for sparkles then.
Hello, Anne.
Who is the only driver not in the top three teams, the Mercedes, Red Bull or Ferrari, to score a podium so far this year?
So, why did Renault get a podium? No, of course he didn't. I don't know.
Go to the audience quicker.
Go to the audience. Yeah. Here we go.
It was Perez, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And then true or false, Lewis Hamilton is the only driver to have three pole positions in a row in 2018. 50-50.
False.
False. You're correct.
Yeah.
It was Sebastian Vettel. Yeah. Between Bahrain, China and Baku.
Yay.
All right. Brad, here we go. Which driver is currently best of the rest, excluding Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari, in the championship standings?
Hülkenberg.
Correct.
That was a podcast topic last week.
I don't listen
will
to the
my
podcast
questions
when I'm not
also
on it.
Be specifically things I've said?
I think we need a quiz that's specifically things I've said in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I would be much better at that.
And true or false, Fernando Alonso has more than 5 times the number of points that Stoffel Van Dorn has this year.
Oh, wow, that's tough. More than 5 times. Yeah, let's...
Wait, hang on. Does Stoffel actually have points?
Let's say yes.
Yes, it's true. Alonso has 44, Van Dorn has 8. And then we'll come back to you, Spanners.
P1.
Here we go. I'm excited.
Who is the only driver on a 0 score so far this season?
Oh, no. Wow. The only driver. So Grosjean has just scored points, so it's so not him. So let's go for Sorokin.
Yes, because he drives too slowly.
Get in.
And true or false?
Am I winning now?
No. then Lewis.
That's not going to happen.
I've made these questions for you. Lewis Hamilton has only 1 fastest lap of the race this year.
Lewis Hamilton.
Stop
fastest.
Googling.
Oh, okay. Sorry, what was the question again? Lewis Hamilton has 1 fastest lap this year.
Only 1.
Yes, true.
Yes, that is true.
Yes,
in
excellent.
Germany, the current leader on that is Renault-bound Daniel Ricciardo.
Cool. That was the first round.
That was the first
How
round.
How do you think it's gone? It's all right, isn't it?
What are the scores so far, 2-1, Nick?
1-1. We have Trumpets and Sparkles in last with 1 point.
Idiots.
And Brad and Spanners in joint first with 2 points.
We'll move on to round two then. So it's F1 or fiction. We're going to revive that old chestnut.
Nice. Yeah.
So just for those who haven't heard it before, I'm going to read you 3 facts, one of which is false. You have to tell me which is the incorrect fact. So Trumpets, your topic is Stoffel Van Dorn.
Oh, great. Can I just point out, being from America, clearly I'm at a disadvantage in this? Because we have problems with fact and fiction.
Yeah.
Ooh.
If it's fake, just say it's fake.
Yeah, okay.
And then he has to go away.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Stoffel Van Dorn was a more dominant...
Fake! Oh, sorry.
He was a more dominant champion in GP2 than Lewis Hamilton was, i.e. he had a greater win percentage.
Okay, that's the first one.
Van Dorn was born in the Netherlands, but chooses to race under Belgian nationality, and he qualified ahead of his teammate Jenson Button on his debut.
The second one is fake.
You agree? Does the audience agree?
Yeah.
They're all nodding. Go on then.
Okay. The false one is B. He is Belgian. It's coincidentally, Max Verstappen was born in Belgium, but chooses to race for Netherlands. That's fine.
Yep.
For that. Good. So 2 points for you. Then we go to Sparkles again. And you're right. On Lance Stroll.
Oh,
going
Christ.
For all the fun ones. So Stroll was part of the Ferrari Young Driver Academy between 2010 and 2015.
Yep.
Wonder how much that cost.
I'm not saying he's real.
About 12 pence.
He's the youngest driver to finish on the podium in his rookie season, and he set the second fastest time in qualifying for Monza in 2017.
It's the last one. He didn't qualify second in Monza, did he? Oh. He started second because somebody had a penalty.
What do we think, audience? Is that right? No idea, I'm hearing.
Just leave them out, they're useless.
That's it. So you're absolutely right. He set the 4th fastest time, but
pressure's
both Red Bulls had engine
yes.
penalties. What a wonderful system. That we
pressure's
found.
On
I
now,
I got
Brad.
Really nervous when you started saying that one, because I knew the first two were true.
Brad, we're going to go for Brendan Hartley, which here you know from a race that you
besties.
Shared. Yeah, absolutely. Hartley has not finished ahead of Gasly so fast this year. Hartley's completed a test day for Mercedes F1 team in 2012. And on his debut, he became the first driver from New Zealand in Formula One for over 30 years.
I'm going to say the first one is false.
Yes, that's correct. He's finished ahead just once. 10th in Baku compared to Gasly's 12th. Although I think Magnussen had a fair deal in that when he tried to run him into a wall. and then Spanners.
So has everyone got those right so far? Oh, man.
Yeah, pressure.
I wouldn't have got any of those, I don't think. So,
well, your topic is your favourite driver, Marcus Ericsson.
Do we not have a jingle for him?
No.
Okay. So, and because it's you, I've actually given you a cheeky fourth option, just because I couldn't resist it.
Right, okay.
You'll see why.
Go on then.
So the first fact, in 4 years of GP2, he only scored 3 victories before being promoted to Formula One. His first taste of Formula One was a test for Braun GP in 2009. In his first year of F1, Ericsson never finished ahead of Kamui Kobayashi. And the fourth fact, Marcus Ericsson is afraid of the sea.
Oh, no. Is that somehow true? Like, if that is somehow true. Okay. Let's go for, the one that, the tested with brawn. Isn't he too young to have done that? I'm going to say false. He didn't test with brawn in 2009.
What do we think? Did he test with brawn? He did.
Oh,
test
with brawn. No way!
Oh, did he actually?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the worst quiz ever.
Yeah. That has genuinely blown my mind.
Yeah, Chris and I thought that was fun.
So hang on, wait a minute. Is he genuinely afraid of the sea?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. No, he's not genuinely afraid.
Oh, right. So that was also false. Right, okay. So we're going to need a judge's ruling on that for the legitimacy of the
quiz. You had a better chance of getting it right.
Yeah, you actually got it wrong anyway.
You had a 50-50. We had a 33. So
we can argue about who was right and wrong all day. So we will.
As I said, my quizzes were never meant to be accurate or actually fair.
Oh, no. That's true. Okay, so one more round?
Do you want to know which one the right one was?
No, I've lost interest now. I don't have points. No.
No, it's fine. Yeah. It was, for those interested, it was C. He did beat Kobayashi twice out of seven times. Final round is...
You're doing very well.
Thanks. Thank you. And you're a beautiful man.
Distracting.
You've got great calves.
The term I prefer.
Great calves. Yeah. My new name is now called Calf Man because... Racing driver.
I complimented his calves before the show. They are magnificent.
It's the only bit of me that.
Come for the question, stay for the calves. Right, carry on.
Okay, final round. Home and Away, which is definitely not stolen from a BBC panel show. So, in this round, you get to choose between two questions, either on a declared subject that you told me you liked in advance, or two questions on a mystery subject that could be anything, maybe slightly things that you don't like. You get 1 point for each question on your safe subject, or 3 points per question.
I need to gamble, yeah. Don't I?
So yeah, what are the scores? So we know whether you need to gamble or not.
Well, in plumb last is Spanners with 2 points.
But that means that it was heavily weighted that last round. That's ridiculous.
In joint second is Trumpets and Sparkles with 3 points each, but in the lead is Brad with 4.
P1, still.
Yeah, P1.
Trumpets. Sorry. Your home topic is tyres. Do you want to go with that or gamble?
I'll roll the dice.
Roll the dice. Interesting. So your away subject is Felipe Massa.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. So at which circuit did Rob Smedley, I'm not going to do an accent, say, Fernando is faster than you?
Oh, so these away ones are quite easy. Oh, this
yeah.
I remember the radio call, but I don't remember the track so much. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Easy if you know.
But I still get a guess at it.
Go on, guess at it, and then we'll see if our clever audience knows.
I'm going to go Monza.
No.
Hockenheim.
It was Hockenheim. Absolutely.
So you get no points. Good.
Wow.
And the second question, Massa holds the record for most victories in Formula One at which circuit?
At which circuit?
Oh, I think I might know.
The thing is, I remember him never quite winning, so this is...
He did very well at one particular circuit.
It was 10 years ago.
Have a guess.
Yeah, you should have. You should have.
Yeah, I'm totally going to gamble now.
Okay, is that a pass? Did the audience know? Now you're going to guess? Go for it.
I'm going to guess.
All right. Just say a track, dude.
Yeah, I know. No, I know it's not Sao Paulo. I'm just going to say Brazil because he's from Brazil.
It's not Blackmore Park. Go for it, Sam.
It's Istanbul Park.
Absolutely. Oh, it is Istanbul.
Do we miss that track or what?
That was a great circuit.
Yeah,
great
go on then. Circuit. So is it me now?
No. Sparkles.
Yes.
Go for it. So your home subject is ex-F1 drivers now in Formula E.
Which I feel great with.
Okay.
But the 3 points.
3 points beckon.
Come on.
We're going to gamble.
So, your away subject is Red Bull before 2010. Because you told me you like things after 2010.
Oh.
So, name one of the three drivers raced by Red Bull in their debut season, which was 2005.
Just one?
Just
you
one.
You get one.
That's one.
Wow.
One of three.
One
Super
of three.
Easy again.
One of three. I know the ones that from like 07 and 08, but I don't know about 05. Liuzzi was one of them, no?
That's his guess.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, it is, because we're running out of time.
That's correct. So it was Liuzzi, Christian Kleen, and David Coulthard.
Ah.
And which
did you see that early? Okay.
He is that old. Which engines did they use in that season?
In that season, Ferrari.
No. Cosworth.
Cosworth, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Last couple of questions then. For Brad, your home subject is F1 at the Nürburgring Nordschleife.
Okay. Oh, F1 at the Nürburgring Nordschleife. That was not what I chose as my subject, but okay, that's fine. I'm not going to have to gamble, because if my maths is correct, by Chris getting 3 points in one of his, and he was only 1 point behind me, I can only draw if I go for my safe one. So let's go for a gamble.
Go away. So your away subject is the wonderful Pastor Maldonado.
Okay.
What number did Maldonado choose to race with in F1?
13.
Oh, straight in.
Damn.
And which driver did he flip over at the Bahrain Grand Prix in 2014? Easy when you know it.
Ooh.
Can I steal this one and get his point?
Can't remember that one.
You can't remember.
But let's give it to the audience then. He's failed.
Give it to Ferret.
Gutierrez.
Okay.
It was Esteban Gutierrez. Okay. So, final one for you, Spanners.
Ooh, let's go. Come on.
Your home subject is Lewis Hamilton.
Hashtag 44.
That's just a number. Number 44.
Is it just a number?
That wasn't the question.
No. You could have hashtag team.
It's a magic number.
All right, go on. What do you want? Home or away?
Oh, I've got to go away.
You've got to go away. Yeah. Fair enough. So your away subject is Nico Rosberg.
Okay. The answer is he should have given him more room on the outside in 2015. He did reverse it up the exit slip road in Monaco. And yes, it was a complete fluke.
Congratulations. 9 points.
Yes. Come on then.
So, for which team did Rosberg make his debut in Formula One?
Oh my God.
Was it not Williams?
It was
Williams. Good. Oh, okay. That just seemed too easy.
Yeah, it is way too easy.
Right.
I feel like there's some bias.
Quiz is terrible. Okay, go on.
And where did Rosberg score his first F1 victory?
Barcelona.
No.
China. So, who won the quiz?
Brad won. What was that noise?
In last place is Trumpets with 3 points.
Idiot.
In third place is Spanners with 5.
That's brilliant, that.
Second place even is Sparkles with 6 points, and P1, Brad, with 7.
Well done, Bradley. Yeah. For the quiz. Thank you very
that
much.
That was just practice. That was practice. Congratulations. For
okay,
yourself.
So. excellent. So I think that Tony is going to give us an award, which we will have live, which is comment of the week. Yeah. And I'll stall. You had two things to do. Come on. Oh, Tony, you're going to have to hold the mic while she does it. This is your entertainment for this evening, by the way. Isn't it?
That's a professional.
Thank you very much. Tony, who's got the comment of the week from the live chat?
Evangelos says the panel looks like an F1 Comic-Con. We like that one.
Yep.
Low stealth. Summer says, hi, Bradley, bored, pulls out phone. But I think our winner, nothing compares. Spanner's ready. When we're in the shed, I can just whack him off.
Thank you very much. I think that's called getting away with it, isn't it?
Oh, completely.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.